Hello and welcome to the Complete Physio podcast. Welcome to the next episode. I'm here today with Dr. John Houghton. John, many thanks for coming today. Now, we're going to be talking about a group of patients that we both see a lot of, John particularly sees a lot of, is patients that have had lots of tendon problems. And what I mean by that is we see a group of patients that have got tennis elbow on both sides. They've got an Achilles tendon problem. They've got a bit of gluteal tendinopathy problem. And these people get quite worried and they can't understand why they've got it. So should these patients be worried, John?
So great question, Chris. I think people shouldn't necessarily be worried. I think people want to find out why things keep happening to them. And I think that, you know, unfortunately, muscle, tendon, bone injuries are common in people who exercise and people who don't. But we'll come back to that. I think the people who have multiple tendon problems, then those are the sorts of people where sometimes some additional investigations or thinking around the problem might throw up a reason for why that has happened.
Because a lot of these people would have had pain for a long period of time, wouldn't they? So they've had 2 or 3 years of tendon pain. They might have got over one, but then the next thing they know, they've got another. What sort of conditions could this be presenting as in terms of, you know, it's not just a local problem? What other conditions could they have?
Yeah, so I think, you know, if I try and break it down into the basics, you know, no one patient is the same. But if it's a younger patient, and when I say younger, certainly anyone in their late teens or even somebody in their 20s, really, unless they're a professional athlete, then if they have got multiple tendon problems in their 20s, that starts to raise a few flags and a few alarm bells in my mind. And the sorts of things that I want to exclude in that situation are a bunch of immune system problems, what we call autoimmune diseases, that might be driving that inflammation.
So that is a disease where it's a bit more of a disease in the whole body or in the system rather than a local problem. Do you just want to explain that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, there are many autoimmune diseases and people will have heard of thyroid problems or type 1 diabetes. So if you get diabetes when you're a child, that's an autoimmune problem where your body is reacting against the cells that make insulin. In the same way, there are a number of glitches in the immune system that can create excessive inflammation that damages your joints or your tendons. So those are conditions that we will see. People will have heard of rheumatoid arthritis. That tends to affect the joints primarily. But there's a family called the spondyloarthropathies or seronegative axial spondyloarthropathies. It's a bit of a mouthful.
It is. You said it well, John.
Us doctors always try and make things more complicated. Yeah. But essentially what happens is that you can get inflammation in a number of the connective or soft tissues. So you can get joint inflammation. It can affect the tendons. It can affect the eyes. It can affect the bowel. So there's a number of conditions that overlap. And there's a big genetic element to this. But it drives inflammation in the tendons in some people, what we call enthesitis.
Yeah.
So the enthesis is the piece of the tendon that anchors the muscle to the bone. And they get inflammation where the tendon attaches onto the bone. And that can cause pain, morning stiffness, sleep disturbance, pain on activity.
Yeah, so we've probably adequately scared everybody who has got a tendon problem. But it's something people need to be aware of, but only if they've really struggled with these tendon problems. And I suppose from a physio point of view, from being a sports doctor, what we're trying to get at is that these patients present with what initially just looks like a normal musculoskeletal mechanical problem like an Achilles tendinopathy.
Yeah.
But when you start to investigate and you look a little bit broader, you actually find that that is just how the disease is presenting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there are some simple questions that patients can ask themselves or ask of their physiotherapist or their doctor. So, you know, when I teach other physios and doctors about this, there are some simple questions. We'll often ask them about, have they had any skin disease? Yeah. And the reason that's important is there's a condition called psoriasis.
Actually more common.
Yeah. Well,
and not everybody
it's the
knows
most common
that
autoimmune.
They have psoriasis. Yeah. Do you want to just explain what people would
Yeah, so psoriasis is the most common autoimmune skin condition, and it creates inflammation in the skin. And for most people, it can give you little purpley sort of plaque type, hard crusty lesions. It tends to affect what we call the extensor surfaces. So that means the back of the elbow, whereas, you know, on the flexor part, then that's normally more eczema-like.
Right.
On the knees, you know, on the kneecap, that's the extensor surfaces. And psoriasis kind of hides.
Yeah.
So it loves hiding behind the ears and on the scalp line, the little purple plaques. Hides in the belly button, hides in the butt crack. And the little places
so people
that
don't always
people
know.
Don't always know. Yeah. And sometimes it causes problems with the nails as well. So I still see people each year where the only psoriasis I can find is the nails. And we know that that's got a genetic association with tendon inflammation and some types of joint inflammation as well.
So, I mean, these are things that people can do, isn't it? Is, you know, if they are struggling, they can, I'm not saying everybody should check their own belly buttons right now, but you do have to look for it, don't you, to find that. And so that's psoriasis, and that can link to this condition which does give tendon problems, as we say, psoriatic arthritis.
Absolutely.
Or psoriatic arthritis. You've talked about psoriasis and skin. What about other things that people should look out for if they're struggling and their Achilles tendon, for example, isn't getting better?
Yeah, so you've got that younger age group where we're wanting to exclude psoriasis or this whole family of inflammation-related disorders. I think what's much more common is people who enjoy sport get into their 40s and then start getting a bit of tennis elbow. Then they have a rotator cuff problem, then their Achilles goes. Now, a lot of the time, it is just random, and I do a full screen looking for risk factors and don't find
them.
But the sort of things that might be relevant are, we know that certainly obesity or being overweight can predispose more to tendon problems. So I'd often look at that, as long as the rest of their metabolic health as well. So I'll look at cholesterol, for example.
And there is a link, isn't there, between cholesterol and tendon problems?
So, yeah, raised cholesterol can be problematic for tendon cell recovery and turnover. Similarly, I see quite a few gout patients. Now, we know that some of them will get inflammation in the tendons as well as the joints. But we know that people with raised uric acid, which is what predisposes to gout, can also get in the way of tendon turnover. Yeah. We know that diabetics are much more likely to get tendon pain. So those are some
and
of the things.
And less likely to recover quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. It affects the repair. And the sort of tsunami of cases that we've seen in the last 10 years has been women around the menopause who, I think, you know, we are much more active than they were 20, 30 years ago. And in those times, those are vulnerable periods for the tendons when the estrogen's starting to swing around or drop out completely. You know, tendon cells have estrogen receptors on. It's a really important part of bone and tendon turnover to have high estrogen. And we've got a load of research and money that goes into osteoporosis, thin bones. You know, and we know that after the menopause, osteoporosis becomes a big problem for women because their bones get weaker a lot quicker than men at that age. But we still have hardly any research or treatments around menopause and tendon issues. And they have the same receptors, and I see it more and more, and I'm sure you do.
Absolutely. Let's just go back to the so we talked about psoriatic arthritis, you talked about rheumatoid arthritis, but there are some other conditions that it can also be the tendon problem can represent. Do you want to just go through a few of those?
In terms of inflammatory conditions?
Yeah, inflammatory conditions.
Yeah, so on the whole, your rheumatoid arthritis rarely affects the tendons. The other one to probably link it with is a condition called axial spondyloarthropathy. Now the primary...
You said that one well too, John.
The primary problem with that is inflammation in the spine. And typically, again, it's a younger age group, although there is a another age group of older men, probably 50s, 60s, where we see a bit of a an increase in frequency of these problems also. And it tends to cause them pain and stiffness in their back, which wakes them early in the morning, kind of 4 o'clock. They're stiff in the back in the morning. They're stiff in the buttock joints, the sacroiliac joints. And when we do MRI scans of those areas, we see inflammation rather than just wear and tear.
Sure, yeah.
And in those patients, we also know that they're much more prone to inflammation as tendons attached to bone or enthesitis.
And is this, are these conditions that do run in families? Is it worth people asking their mum and dad whether they've got any of these conditions?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the important thing is that we associate it primarily with a gene, which is called the HLA-B27 gene. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not that important what it's called, but we know that 8% of the Caucasian population carry that gene. It's a little bit lower in non-Caucasian populations. So 1 in 12 people will have it. Mm. And I think people sometimes get sent to me because they're worried that they carry that gene. Mm. That shouldn't be the case.
But it is a risk factor.
It's a risk factor.
Yeah.
But, you know, 1 in 12 people carry that gene, and not everybody gets inflammatory spinal disease and enthesitis.
Yeah.
It's a risk factor, and it does run in families. Mm. But it might be that you have a grandfather who had psoriasis. It might be an uncle who had ulcerative colitis, which is a bowel inflammation problem. It might be a granny who had iritis in the eye. So they're all linked in with that specific gene, not just tendon inflammation, spine inflammation. But there can be a strong family history, yes.
So if somebody's sitting at home and, you know, they are in that group and they've got multiple tendon problems and they're not getting better, what would you suggest that they do?
So I think that's where sometimes it's worth talking to a specialist. Mm. You know, that might be a GP. It might be a sport and exercise medicine consultant. It might be an experienced physiotherapist who can ask the right questions and direct them as to what needs to be done.
And that's probably the key thing. And hopefully this podcast done that, is that it's just really about asking those correct questions. If you don't ask, you're never going to relate these different symptoms, are
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. Yeah. So there are certain blood tests that we might check. And I think now more and more people, as they get older, are used to having a set of blood tests every few years at the GP, maybe.
Yeah. And what specifically would you, because somebody might be at home going, well, I've had blood tests, they were normal.
Yeah.
But you do have to request the right thing.
Yeah, so most normal blood screens will be mainly checking the major organs.
Yeah.
It will check that your blood count is normal. It will check your liver tests and your kidney, and maybe a little bit of bone like calcium.
Yeah.
But I think the things that I add into that is I would often check their uric acid or urate. I would normally check their HbA1c, which is a marker of their general sugar control, a pre-warning of diabetes almost. I would look at their inflammation markers, two big ones called the ESR and the CRP. We'd look at their cholesterol and their triglycerides. And sometimes if there were other features, I might check their thyroid function, for example, because that can be involved also. So it's a broad screen. If I suspect an inflammatory problem, I'll also check the HLA-B27 gene. Mm. And it's a yes or no answer on that
one. But the key thing there is that you do need to request specific blood tests or parts of that blood test to be looked at to know whether or not you're dealing with one of these conditions.
If you're asking the question, why have I got multiple tendon pain, then absolutely the screen needs to be specific rather than generic.
And what about, what about things like MRIs, ultrasounds of that tendon? Does that help at all with finding out whether or not this is part of another condition?
Yeah, absolutely it can do. So again, we talked a little bit earlier about how ultrasound is a lot more available, cheaper than MRI. So MRI is great for looking at enthesitis, tendon inflammation, because it shows you what goes on in the bone.
Sure.
And that's where ultrasound falls down. But what you can do with ultrasound is look at multiple tendons in one sitting.
Yeah.
So if you have someone who's skilled in ultrasound, such as yourself, you can look at their rotator cuff, their elbow, their patella, their Achilles, all in one sitting and see, am I seeing a trend here? Am I seeing thickening, inflammation? Where is the inflammation? Is it where the bone is attaching?
Yeah.
So, the gold standard for enthesitis is probably MRI, but I think ultrasound is a great way at getting a really good answer on the tendon.
And normally getting some sort of local imaging is going to be part of the diagnostic workup, I assume, for actually coming to a final diagnosis of what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, though, that this is sometimes one of the difficulties that we have with healthcare is that we're not always asking the right question. Mm. So people can have scans and blood tests, but it might be that there are different sequences on the scans that I might do as a specialist, or different blood tests. And I understand that, you know, not everybody can have everything all of the time. Mm. But I think if people are struggling and they haven't got the answers, that's when they probably need to talk to a specialist about how can I, you know, do more to understand why. Yeah. But unfortunately, in many people, we still do all of the screening and the blood tests are pretty normal. And I think there are many still low-level genetic risk factors that we don't have all the answers for at the moment and may never have.
Yeah, absolutely. And if somebody does get investigated, I suppose this is more of a sort of general treatment question, but that is going to, if you find out that they have a more of a inflammatory problem, a systemic inflammatory problem, so the inflammation is actually in their body rather than just locally, how does that treatment differ, and what other treatment options does that actually open up?
Yeah, so it does open up different avenues. And I think, like with all treatments, there's risks and benefits. And for example, a lot of people, if they have a headache, might take a couple of ibuprofen. If they have an acute inflammation around the tendon, like we were talking about earlier, they might take a week of medication. Mm. For people who have some of these conditions, they might be taking an anti-inflammatory for 30 years.
Yes.
And it controls their condition, it helps. But we need to justify that because of the risk and the benefit. And that's always a conversation that I think we sometimes don't do well.
Yeah.
Over and above that, then sometimes for the whole body inflammation conditions, we might be using steroids. And that might be injections or tablets. But there's a justification there because we know that there's an inflammation that needs treating. Over and above that, there are what we call disease-modifying drugs. And people may have heard of methotrexate or sulfasalazine, for example. And then the next level up are called the biological therapies. And these have only been around 20 years in common practice, which is a very short period of time. Yeah. But they've revolutionized the treatment of these immune inflammatory conditions.
And there's also, I believe, John, something to be said of not delaying that treatment sometimes and actually getting a better prognosis if we can get that good diagnosis early and get people onto the right medication, as you say, if they've been counselled through the right
pros and cons. Absolutely. So I was talking about axial spondyloarthropathy. Yeah. So there was a great research paper that showed that the average duration of symptoms, i.e. back stiffness, was 8.5 years before a final diagnosis. And we know that if you start treating these conditions within 12 months, the outcomes are so much better and you can almost put people into remission and get them off the drugs. If they have well-established disease over many years, that's much less likely.
Yeah. So the principle is get the right diagnosis as soon as possible to get onto the right treatment course. And certainly, I think the reason we wanted to do this podcast is to say that not everybody with localized tendon problems has a localized problem. It can actually be part of a larger, or not larger, but a bit more of a systemic problem rather than a local problem.
Yeah, and I think I'd encourage people who are watching the podcast and they've got their Achilles pain or whatever tendon pain, when you speak to your therapist, tell them.
Yeah.
Tell them whether you've had skin problems or other joint problems or other tendon problems.
Yeah. Because or infections, eye infections, bowel infections.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, tell them as much information as possible. And if they're a good therapist or a good doctor, then they'll listen and they'll try and put some of the pieces together for you. Like I said, sometimes we don't find a link.
You've got to ask the questions.
Got to ask the questions.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, John.
Thank you so much.